KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
We are talking this half hour about the wily spruce bark beetle, who has caused all manner of problems around here for decades, I imagine. And there may be more coming, or maybe it's on the downswing. We're going to find out. I have guests in the studio, Matt Bowser, the refuge entomologist, and on the phone, hopefully if I pressed all the buttons right, I've got Jason Mohn with the State of Division of Forestry. Is that right?
Correct.
All right. Excellent. You sound like you're right next door, too, so we got a good connection. Well, let's see. Jason, do you know Matt? Matt, do you know Jason?
Oh, yeah. We know each other.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Excellent. Well, there you go. Well, spruce bark beetles, you know, Jason, I wanted to ask you off the start here. I had seen the map that I think you're involved with putting out here a couple of weeks ago showing the summer survey of spruce bark beetle infestation around Cook Inlet. And it seems to be we're not the epicenter of spruce bark beetles anymore. Is that something we should be happy about?
Well, you know, spruce beetle has typically, as folks down there well know, caused quite a lot of damage in South Central Alaska in general. The current outbreak is, you know, we are seeing significantly more damage in the Susitna River Valley and some of the adjacent drainages there. But there certainly is still a lot occurring on the Kenai.
Mm-hmm. What did the map show? Is there a trend? Are we on the downhill side of this? Because they're periodic, right? The spruce bark beetles.
Spruce beetle is always in the environment. Outbreaks are somewhat periodic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So our surveys are a cooperative effort between the U.S. Forest Service and the Division of Forestry, and we survey roughly 15% of the state's forest each year during these surveys. So the data that was presented in the map you're referencing and those that I can report on here are merely a subset of what might be occurring out there. So we have started picking up this outbreak around 2016. It is still on the upward trajectory. In 2016, we saw about 188,000 acres statewide. This year, tentative numbers somewhere around 590,000 acres. So we're still seeing an increase, and so I don't know that I can predict what next year will bring.
Wow. Well, Matt, let me ask you: what have you seen in the refuge as far as the spread of this current outbreak we're in?
Sure. Yeah. Locally, this at least on the refuge, this recent outbreak has been concentrated on the northern half of the refuge, so north of the Sterling Highway and north of Skelak Lake. And some of those stands, my colleague Don Magnus has been working out there, looking at spruce bark beetles this summer. And some of those stands are seeing 90 to 95% of susceptible trees hit. So that also answers part of the question that Jason was just answering. That in that area, at least, they're running out of trees. So in that area, that you won't see much more outbreak.
Oh, I understand. Oh, I get it. There so many of them are getting affected. The outbreak can't grow. It's
right. Oh. Right. So the question people have been asking here, and I don't have a great answer for right now, is this going to continue marching south at all where there still is mature forest? See, the last outbreak in the 90s hit the southern peninsula, and it did thin forest in the northern peninsula, but it was really the southern peninsula that saw almost complete stand, well, in some places, really complete stand removal.
Yeah.
But there are still some places on the southern peninsula that have mature trees, and so far, from what I've seen, we haven't seen a whole lot of damage down there. And I wanted to ask Jason what he's seen. Have you been, did you fly your survey on the southern peninsula also?
Yeah, so we covered much of the peninsula during the surveys, and really the bulk of what spruce beetle damage we're seeing on the peninsula is roughly from the Kenai River north and Kenai Mountains west. So it's primarily centered in that kind of northwestern portion of the peninsula, a little bit scattered elsewhere.
And Jason, well, I had a question I wanted to ask you. Usually spruce bark beetles are mostly attacking mature, large diameter trees that are more susceptible. But we've been seeing quite a few smaller diameter trees and black spruce that seem to be hitting by bark beetles. Is that Ips right now, or do you think it's Dendroctonus also? Or Dendroctonus is the genus of the spruce bark beetle.
Yeah, so I would say that's consistent with what we've been seeing across South Central. Certainly, spruce beetle is going to initially focus on those larger, slower-growing white spruce or Lutz spruce. Certainly can attack Sitka spruce as well. Black spruce is much less common a host for spruce beetle and typically would not be one they would favor at all. We are seeing a lot of attacks in black spruce, but not near at the rate that we're seeing attacks in white spruce. I think it's more of a proximity thing to infested white spruce or Lutz spruce or something.
Okay. Are you seeing any Ips at all? That's, you know, a smaller bark beetle.
Occasionally some, but not in any great number in South Central.
You mentioned that they could infect Sitka spruce, and that's previously unknown to me. Those are big, beautiful trees. I don't know how much is this danger, and why aren't they sweeping through them as fast as they are in white spruce, I guess.
Well, spruce beetle can attack any of our native spruce trees, as well as potentially ornamental spruce trees. And so it's, preference would be for white spruce or Lutz spruce, a little more so than some of those others, perhaps. And I think in the areas where we are seeing the populations building, those aren't really in Sitka spruce areas.
Oh, okay. Is that a climate thing, or is it a rain? Is it a winter temperature differential? Or what causes those variations by region?
Oh, I don't know that I can pinpoint that.
Oh. Sure. Well, I can help with some of that. So, a lot of it has to. It's much of it has to do with drought stress. That's much of what causes the cyclicity that we see. Why we'll have a decade where we'll have outbreaks, and then we'll have intervening decades without. It has to do with warm, dry summers when the trees are more stressed. But a lot of it does have to do with the host tree species, and also where they're growing. But Jason mentioned the Lutz spruce, and that's the hybrid between Sitka and white spruce, and we see that it's the dominant tree. Spruce tree on a lot of the southern peninsula, and it was a Lutz spruce, which is the hybrid, that was thinned so heavily in the 90s.
Oh,
and now we're seeing more in white spruce.
I did not know that. I thought it was all white spruce.
Well, it is confusing.
Yeah,
because they, like I said, they do hybridize, and there are no hard lines between these zones of hybridization.
Right. So we might expect that climate change progresses, and if we become warmer and drier, which I guess there's no real guarantee we're going to be drier if it's warmer around here, but you'd expect the beetles to continue to feast or feast more often, flourish.
Yeah, and but the interesting part of the interesting question is so we'll expect spruce bark beetles and spruce trees to be interacting this way for the foreseeable future. But it's that the moving of the thresholds of where a particular spot in the landscape might be more or less suitable to spruce. It ends up being drought stress that is the limiter. So there are places that maybe for decades of cool wet summers where that was good spruce habitat. If it's a place that's susceptible to drying, you're going to see less spruce there. But there are still places that are always wet, which will remain good spruce habitat. So we will still have spruce, but there just might be, it might be a lower equilibrium for spruce.
Oh, okay. Is there anything people can do about an infestation? Say I've got 10 acres behind my house on the North Road, and I'm seeing the trees all around it getting infested. Is there anything I can do if I want to keep my trees?
I'm going to defer to Jason there.
Jason, what do you think?
Well, so this time of year, well, first of all, let me say if the tree is already heavily attacked, there's no real option available for saving that tree from the damage that's been done by the beetle. So there are some preventative pesticides available for protecting trees that are not attacked. If you have trees that are actively infested, this is a good time of year to remove those and debark them, or you process them in some way for firewood or otherwise to help move those beetles out of the system. And in general, this time of year, the beetles have stopped flying for the year, so there shouldn't be any more attacks on trees from this time till next spring. So it's a good time to survey your land and identify which trees might be suitable for prevention treatments or for removal or those sorts of things.
I'm trying to formulate a question in my mind about what this means for average people. People who just live here in the Central Peninsula, and these trees are getting infested more or here and there. Are there measurable impacts on society, or is there a dollar figure attached to any of this? It's horrible that we're going to see a bunch of trees dying where they probably shouldn't be. I would argue
that the trees were going to die at some point anyway. It just happens to be that spruce bark beetles are the agent that's taking them out now.
Okay.
But the spruce trees have lots of enemies and lots of organisms that parasitize or eat the trees, and it's the synchrony of seeing that all at once that makes it seem like a more of a tragedy. But it's really just a reality of the boreal system.
That's part of their role.
Right. And in general, our lower diversity systems, and we have less than 10 kinds of trees here, native trees. These boreal systems tend to have more dramatic cycles than more temperate or tropical systems. So it's part of the reality of the system in which we live. And it's hard to change that. It's a powerful cycle, and that's part of why we see it so widespread. And it's just a reality of where we live.
Literally a force of nature, isn't it?
Yes.
Wow. Jason, what do you think? What can be done? Can anything be done? And if so, what? And if not, what should we do in the meantime?
Certainly if there are markets for that material or for the infested trees, or opportunities for removing actively infested trees, that would certainly be the best direction to go. Sanitation harvest is what that's typically called, where you remove the trees that are actively infested. In a lot of these forest types, it's a large mix of spruce densities or spruce and birch mixes or things like that. And so the spruce component of that stand might be, a small percentage of the trees in the entire property or something like that, which can make it challenging to remove those specifically, I guess.
Is there a challenge in dealing with spruce bark beetle that doesn't recognize boundaries between the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge and the national forests and the state forests?
I think certainly more for private landowners, but it goes both ways. The beetles are they're regional. They're on private lands and public lands. So yeah, they certainly don't recognize the boundaries.
Does it make it tough for researchers like yourself and like Jason here, having to deal with other jurisdictions in studying these? Because I guess there's no real response to study them, right?
Well, no, there certainly can be responses. I mean, you can. There are lots of potentials here. We're already changing the landscape in many ways. We're already introducing. You know, there are trees here that we're introducing already. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. Yes, we're responsible for taking a really considering our options. And hands off is certainly one approach, but that may not be the best option. But that's mostly what's been done historically in Alaska, is especially entities like the refuge and the national forests have mostly been hands off and allowed natural processes to happen. But more and more that is changing, and we're going to be more responsible for making choices as, for example, what trees should we plant, if anything should be planted? Should we stop exotic trees from invading the forest or not? Because some people, in response to spruce bark beetles, have been planting pines and larch, but there are concerns with doing that, too. So there are a lot of implications and things that can be done.
Right. There was an article in the local paper last week about meta sequoias showing up, or again, they used to be a dominant tree here, and
yes,
now they're coming back, or people are planting them, or they're finding them.
Yes, people are planting them now. They were endemic to much of Western North America some time ago, and you can find fossils of them in Soldovia,
oh,
for
wow.
example. But they were, I think it was the 1940s or 50s, the tree was thought to have been extinct. It was a very dominant tree in the fossil record. But at that time, some were found in, I think it was in China. And since then, they've been, seeds have been distributed, and they're a very popular ornamental tree in a lot of the world now. But people are planting them here again.
Huh. Interesting. Jason, you might have some insight into this. I guess I was sort of tiptoeing around what are the financial impacts as well as the cultural impacts. But here's a better question. If these trees were commercially valuable, let's say, Sitka spruce, you know, which is, well, there's not much logging left in Alaska anyway. So my question, I guess, is how were these kind of things handled in forests that were used for that were logged commercially? I mean, is there a history of industry, I guess, trying to address this?
I think that's going back a little bit before my knowledge up here, but. And so I don't think I can really address what occurred in the previous outbreak. I don't know if Matt might have some thoughts on that, but,
What do you think, Matt, infestations in a commercially viable tree?
Well, this is not my area of expertise, but I know it wasn't very high value lumber, but I remember in the early 2000s here, there were logging trucks on, I think, mostly borough and state lands. But I'm not sure about where all the trees are coming from. But you could go down to Homer and see big ships being loaded up with spruce trees from here. And these were trees killed in the 90s outbreak.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't especially profitable, I don't think.
All right.
It's not high-value timber.
I remember, what did they call it? They call it Mount Homer, the big pile of sawdust down there on the spit. That was all spruce bark beetle sawdust, right?
I don't know about that. I just remember seeing all these logs decked and being stacked onto big ships. It was pretty neat to see.
Wow.
Well, what's next for spruce bark beetle science and knowledge? And what are the last things you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, there, I know my colleague Don Magnus has been working on this summer. I know there's going to be quite a bit of done looking at questions that remain. So looking at differences in genetics in host tree susceptibility. So there's a whole lot, you know, having two species involved, the Sitka and the white and the hybrid, and lots of variation in there. There has been some work done on looking at varying susceptibility, and now we're looking into the genetics of that, looking at what trees, you know, might survive best in the future.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to turn my mic up. Jason, how about yourself? Is there anything, any last thing you'd like to leave our listeners with on this topic?
Yeah, absolutely. So if people are not already aware of it, we, the Division of Forestry, the U.S. Forest Service, Forest Health Protection, and also the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service, have a cooperative website that is www.alaskasprucebeetle.org that has a lot of information on spruce beetle biology, identification, management, you know, how best to make plans for your own property and trees. I will also mention we have a free a handful of free workshops coming up for anybody who might want to attend. There are two of them next week in the Mat-Su Valley, one on October 16th in the evening in Palmer Forestry office, one on October 17th at the Houston City Hall, 6 to 8 p.m., and then in Kenai on November 8th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Building. Within that alaskaspruceveal.org website, there's an upcoming events tab, and that will have all these, the same information. You know, folks are always welcome to get in touch with us if you have additional questions or anything of that sort.
Well, thank you very much for that, Jason, and thank you very much for coming in, Matt. You know, sure. You know what you left me with? You left me with the knowledge that spruce bark beetles need something to eat too, and the spruce trees apparently are, that's their role in not society, in the environment, right? Their yep. ecosystem. Yeah, I mean, that's not something I ever thought of. You know, I'm, you know, it's like, oh, how much is this tree worth, you know, kind of guy, instead of, well, that's part of its job.
Yep.
This tree was born partially maybe to feed other things.
Right, it's part of a complex system.
Wow. It's a complex system. I like that. Well, thank you both for coming in. I really appreciate it. Matt, you're a surprise this morning, and a pleasant surprise. I'm glad you made it in.
Right. Yep, glad to be here.
And thanks. Jason, thanks so much for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right.